Hey, that's Coach Mike here at XCoachMike.com. Premium guys, love you. This is a first-time podcast with a coach I found to be incredibly interesting, Jason Lang at Pfeiffer, quickly making a mark on the D2 scene. Interesting guy, defensive coach that now is kind of an offensive guru. You know, they're averaging over 40 shots a game, and I think it's a program to watch for. I was greatly intrigued with the podcast, where he's got a very unique way of planning his practices. For a young guy, it's almost an old-school practice plan philosophy, including 6v6 and man down at the end of practice, pretty steadfastly. I think you're going to get a kick out of it. Great thanks to our buddies at Crossover for sponsoring this podcast and making everything possible. Special thanks to you for the coaches clinics. We're booking now for fall. Everything you've done is wonderful. Without further ado, I think you're going to find this really, really interesting. Coach Jason Lang from Pfeiffer.
Hey. Lax Coach Mike here, laxcoachmike.com. Man, love you guys to death. Got a new coach on today. I'm really, really excited about it. Got some kids that have played for me that have gone up and played for him, and they absolutely love him. Going into his third year at the time of this podcast, we try and keep him timeless, Coach. But anyway, Jason Lang at Pfeiffer. Coach, welcome.
Thanks, Mike. Definitely pleasure to be here and honored that have the opportunity to talk with you today.
Oh, man, don't be honored. Yeah, you're a coach. We're just writing articles here and going on the internet. Coach, give us the bio on the website's a little bit sketchy. I know you're from Connecticut, right?
I am. Yes.
Yeah, give me just a 20-second background, especially on high school and where you played up there before you went down and played on some of those great teams for Coach Woods at Mars Hill.
Yeah, so you know, grew up in Danbury, Connecticut. It's about an hour and a half outside of New York City. In Fairfield County, played lacrosse at Danbury High School, which at the time was not a powerhouse. A very tough league up there, in the FCAC with, you know, Darien, New Canaan, Richfield. And, you know, we did okay, you know, qualified for the state tournament, you know, my last 2 years there. And, you know, was lucky enough to get recruited and, you know, visited Mars Hill when I was a senior in high school, and fell in love with the place. So, you know, that's how I got down to North Carolina from New England.
Coach, was Sean Woods there when you were a freshman?
He was not.
Okay, yeah.
I was actually recruited by Brian Ankin, and played for him for 2 years, and then played for Coach Woods for 2 years.
Yeah, we love Coach Woods. We've had him and Scotty Poplar on, you know, his defensive guy. He incidentally went to my high school. Shout out to Worthington High School. But anyway, yeah, very, very cool. So then you were at Mars Hill and you came over to Pfeiffer, you know, which, yeah, I went back and looked on Lax Power that when you came in your first year, I looked at that schedule. It was pretty brutal.
It was. You know, it was actually that year was the toughest. Or Lax Power had ranked it the toughest schedule in the country. You know, for me it was gut wrenching at times, but you know, it was a really good experience. You know, coaching in such close games, and you know, game planning, and you know, really a lot of it relied on the kids, and they did a great job of showing up every day, playing, you know, ranked team after ranked team, you know, week in and week out. And I think it really, really helps set the bar moving forward for these younger guys, you know, knowing what it takes to play at that level and what it takes to win and take that next step to, you know, making the NCAA tournament.
Well, and I think it adds credibility to the program. You know, it just kind of helps recruiting and everything else, you know.
Yeah, it does, absolutely.
At the end of the day, you came out of there like 9-5 and something, and all is good.
Yes.
All is good. Hey, Coach, we haven't had you on before, and I understand that fall ball is totally different than spring ball and all those kind of things, but is there a basic template or practice routine schedule that you kind of plug stuff in and out to? Have you changed that? Can you walk us through what a basic practice planning session looks like with the coaches at Pfeiffer, how it goes, how you start and how you work through that practice plan?
Yeah, so, you know, probably about a week before our first practice, my staff and I will sit down and we'll implement, you know, the first week of practice. We'll plan that first week. You know, this is what we want to get done. This is what we want to accomplish. And it varies from year to year. You know, for example, last year we had no fall scrimmages. You know, we brought in a class of about 18 guys. So my thought process was, you know, I'm not going to rush to install offense, defense. We're gonna take it day by day, and if we need to spend an extra day or two, you know, going over a different aspect of offense, defense, riding or clearing, you know, we'll have the flexibility to do that. Part of that was because we were implementing, you know, a brand new offense.
Sure.
This year, we do have a fall scrimmage at the end of October. So, you know, we'll have to be a little bit more on task as far as, you know, implementing, you know, our basic slide package, you know, our basic offense, what we're going to run. But for that first week, probably first 4 or 5 practices, we're going to have a pretty good idea of what we're going to accomplish. And, you know, we should be able to stay on task for those first 4 to 5 days. It's when you move in, you know, to that second, third week, you know, once you're watching film with the guys and, you know, you're watching film with the staff, that we can, you know, get a chance to see, okay, maybe we're not understanding this, or maybe we grasp this really well. We don't need to spend another, you know, another practice slot on it or, you know, another segment of practice on it. We can move on to something else.
Coach, are you a guy that shares the plan with the players or doesn't share?
I do share with the players. You know, I think that, you know, part of the kids' development and growing up is, okay, this is what we're doing today. This is what I expect of you. You know, let's get this done. Now, that being said, on the other hand, we do occasionally throw a drill or a conditioner in the middle of practice that might not be there just to see how they react. You know, we try to create a little bit of adversity for them, because I believe that, you know, the game of lacrosse is a game of mistakes, and, you know, it's how you respond to those mistakes, that is the outcome, you know, proves the outcome. Are you going to be successful, or are you going to let one mistake compound another mistake, and it keeps growing on you? So, you know, to throw a little bit of adversity at the guys, I think is important to see how they react to it.
Cool. So walk me through a basic skeleton, Coach.
Yeah, so we usually start every day with a thorough warm-up and stretch. I would say, you know, the first 20 to 30 minutes of every practice, we are stretching and getting loose. And that's something that, you know, as a young assistant coach, I hated. You know, we're wasting 30 minutes a day stretching and 15 to 20 minutes at the end of practice, stretching down afterwards. But it really prevents injuries. And as a head coach, you know, I can tell you there's nothing worse than having, you know, any player, but let alone one of your, you know, if you have a good player that's out because he tweaked a hammy or a groin because you didn't spend time stretching. I'm not a big fan of conditioning just to condition. I like to incorporate, you know, full field drills, up and down, with balls in the sticks, game-like situations, when it comes to stick work, and we try to use that as a hitting conditioner. So we'll usually start practice off with, you know, about 10 to 15 minutes of stick work, but it's usually almost always, different full field stick work drills. So the guys are sprinting up and down the field and changing direction. Once we're finished with that, we'll most likely get into a full field, type of transition drill, just to get things going, you know, get the pace going, get the excitement level up. Once we're done with that, we'll usually break off, into 2 half fields, And we'll have a segment for each field of what we want to work on that day offensively and defensively. You know, for example, early on we might be talking about pick play, on my end with the offense. You know, we'll talk to those guys about, you know, how to set a correct pick, how to set up, you know, how, for the ball carrier, how to set up your man so you run him off the pick correctly, you know, what to do off the ball, so you're setting a proper pick at the right angle, and then what to do once that guy with the ball, you know, clears you. Are you going to pop? Are you going to fade? Are you going to roll? Are you going to slip? And reading the defender. On the other side of the field, my assistant coaches, you know, they'll be going over, you know, the defensive aspect of pick play, you know, communicating through a pick. You know, are we going to switch? Are we going to get through? You know, making sure we're giving the, you know, the guy covering the ball carrier enough room to get through if that's what we're going to do. After that, you know, we'll usually throw another full field drill, into practice. And then, you know, depending on where we are, in the fall or in the spring, you know, some riding and clearing, you know, full field scrimmage. I like to do a drill we call full field scramble, where, you know, I have a ball or a couple balls in the middle of the field. And at any point in time, I blow the whistle, the ball's turned over. I can hold the guy back to give him a 4-on-3, a 5-on-4. You know, we can, you know, send a guy in the hole early to give him a 4-on, you know, a 4-on-4 in transition to see how we defend it. So just giving them different scenarios that could take place, throughout a game. I do like to have the kids, you know, scrimmage, or play 6-on-6 at the end of practice. Once all of our, offense and defense is implemented, just because there is no substitute for actually playing lacrosse and facing off and getting up and down the field.
Cool, man. Let me, Coach, if it's okay, let me walk back through this. So you really, I don't think I've talked to anybody who spent as much time on the stretching as you do. So we get 20 minutes, maybe even a little bit more, on the stretching side. Were what 8 to 10 minutes in a full field stick work drill?
Yeah, about that. Yep.
Okay, and then well, before I go through, let me ask you. I'm presuming you got a clock on the field here, Coach. What is your target for the individual drill segments? Are you a 7-minute guy, an 8-minute guy, a 12-minute guy? Do you not use the clock?
We definitely use the clock. It just depends on, you know, what we're doing. On that day, you know, there's a ton of things that we do, individually. If we're just working on, you know, pick play, and you're getting, you know, 15 to 20 second, you know, reps per group, you know, we could probably cut that down, you know, 8 to 10 minutes.
Right.
And then we'll rotate, you know, the guys that were down on the offensive end will go to the defensive end and vice versa. You know, if we're doing, you know, a bigger drill where we're having, you know, five offensive guys, doing a 5-on-5, you know, slide and recover type thing, you know, that might take a little longer because there's a little more teaching, there's more moving parts. So there we might go 10 to 12 minutes.
Okay.
It just depends on what we're doing that day and what our goals are as a coaching staff, to get out of each drill.
All right. So when we move into the, And all that's predetermined on the practice plan, right, Coach?
Yeah, everything's predetermined.
In that segment, 7 or 8 minutes in this segment, if it's something that's a little bit more micro. Yeah, I got it. So when you move into the full field transition, what kind of time do we usually have on the clock for that one?
It depends. You know, if we like to do a drill, I'm sure, you know, most coaches, you know, have a variation of this drill. We call it, you know, progression, where we'll split our team up, you know, into two teams. You know, each goalie will have a bunch of balls, and, you know, they'll break out a 4-on-3. They'll come back down as a 4-on-4, and they'll go back down as a 5-on-4. You know, we probably do that drill for about 10 minutes. You know, we do a clearing drill, that we call circle the wagons, where we have, you know, 6 guys on, so 12 guys running around the crease, you know, half in yellow, half in black. Throw the ball to the goalie, we yell break, and you have to clear the ball. That drill, it's a little more time consuming because you want to make sure you're getting reps in. And if something goes wrong, you know, I like to, you know, at least early on, you know, stop and teach the guys, you know, right when they make that mistake. But as we move on in the season, you know, we always film everything, but as we move on in the season, you know, we can teach via film.
Yeah, man, I'll tell you what, if I can digress for a second, it is a huge philosophical issue with high school and rec coaches when we get on the site, Jason. I mean, I think like 2 or 3 years ago, you know, we finally got them to drink the Kool-Aid of 7 to 10 minute drills, trying to run 10 drills during a practice or 11 drills or even 12 drills during a practice. You know, get that pace, bang, bang, bang. We encourage our high school coaches to track touches. You know, we try and get every player 200 touches in the first hour, 100 touches in the subsequent hour. So every day is 300 touches, you know. And, you know, when a guy's hurt one day, you just have him pick out a guy and put a notch. You know, I mean, we just track and get him that kind of stuff. And maybe it's a coach that doesn't want to play that kind of tempo, and then he's trying to get 200 touches into practice. But at least he's got an understanding of, you know, the pace of practice and so on and so forth. And, man, I you know, when I was coaching the Copperhead National Championship team and coaching at Auburn, I went through this. I think I got to the point where I was so focused on pace of practice and drills and touches that I was no longer coaching, you know?
Yeah.
And I would rationalize, like in my own mind, oh, they're learning by doing, you know?
Right.
And a high school coach doesn't have, you know, fall ball to do that, you know, 40 hours of pure teaching or heavily laden on teaching percentage-wise, if that makes sense, you know? A typical high school coach, you know, if you're spending 6 or 8 minutes on film before you take the kids outside, you know, you're almost already at the point where they're throwing pencils and talking about Lucy because the attention span is so short.
Absolutely.
You know? And it's a, you know, I get guys. And I talk about it on the air, and I get coaches that call me, and I'm going, hey, man, you're talking to the wrong guy because, you know, now I think in my coaching career, I'm trying to look back and going, you know, where do I need to find a better balance, you know, of taking the time to coach and teach. You know, and high school coaches, I'm going to ask for your comment in a second, but, you know, the high school coaches, you know, a lot of times you got what we call on the website, you know, a coach and a half. You know, you got a lacrosse coach, and then you got a social studies teacher that's got the best intentions, you know.
Yep.
I mean, no offense to social studies teachers. God love them, you know.
Right.
But you know what I mean. And
I do.
I think on our website, you know, with our members, you know, I think I pushed it, and encouraged college coaches on the air to push it to the point where, you know, do you ever think about, and let's not talk about fall, because fall is kind of a horse of a different color, but, you know, when you get into the spring, you know, do you ever, and your coaching staff is not enormous, you know, and looking at it, I'm assuming you got one guy who spent a lot of time, you know, with goalies and a lot of face-off time. So, you know, you don't have five guys out there when you're running these transition drills or when you're running a full field transition, so to speak. Do you talk about that as a staff, or would you comment on my comments, and then we'll get back to the practice plan?
Yeah, I think that...
I mean, does that make any sense?
No, it does. Yeah, absolutely, it does. You know, at least for us, you know, we try to bring those, you know, those positions, the goalies and the face-off guys, we try to get those guys out, you know, 30 minutes before practice. So, you know, they get that individual attention.
Right.
You know, I think there's no secret that, you know, the better that your goalie and your face-off guy are, you know, the better coach that you are because you're going to win more games.
I can't believe you said that. I say that all the time, and I've been quoted in the national media, you know. People always ask me, if you could pick out one or two things out of, you know, 118 or 120 hours of interviews with coaches that really separates, you know, a great team, I'm going, well, there's actually two things, and they sit on the edge of the chair, you know. And I got a face-off and goalie.
Yeah,
if you got a face-off guy and you got a goalie guy, you're automatically a better coach. I mean,
and you're going to have, you know, if you can have the ball and you can stop it from going in, you know, you're ahead of the curve. So, you know, when we are, you know, in practice, everybody is in practice. We don't have, you know, our face-off guys off to the side doing something on their own because face-off guys especially, you know, they're not going to win it every time. So, you know, they need to understand how to play defense. You know, when they do have the ball on their stick, they need to understand, you know, where they're going with the ball, how to escape pressure, you know, if they're coming down on a fast break, where to throw the ball. And if they don't get reps, they're probably going to make a mistake in a game. And, you know, if you don't give them reps, you can't really blame them for making a mistake because they're not doing it and getting repetition every day. So, you know, as far as, you know, your comments just a little while ago on, you know, the fast pace and the tempo of practice, you know, I'm a big believer in it. It's all how each individual coach wants to play in their philosophy. I'm a believer that the game was meant to be played fast and, you know, transition is a part of our game and it puts transition and pushing transition puts a lot of stress on the defense. And, you know, it's a lot easier to score goals, when you're up a man versus when you're even. So, you know, my philosophy is, you know, if we can push transition and, you know, teach our guys how to make good decisions in transition, you know, we're going to theoretically be able to score more goals. Now, obviously, we still have to put the ball in the back of the net, but theoretically, we should be able to find a two-on-one and get higher percentage shots.
Well, and for the listeners' edification, did you like that, man? I used edification in an interview. I've been working on that. It's a big word, man. A lot of syllables in edification. I mean, here's a team that shot a little over 41 shots a game last year, had 14 goals a game. So obviously you're pushing the tempo, and that doesn't come by accident. I mean, that comes by the way you practice.
Right, and, you know, now the hindsight of that is, you know, it hurt us in a few situations too. And, you know,
It always does, doesn't it? I mean, that's what position guys don't understand. I mean, if you, you know, I get guys all the time, you know, can I come to one of your practices? I want my teams to play the way your teams play. I'm going, you got to understand, you know, we may get – And you got to learn how to manufacture transition out of 6v6 and other stuff too. But I mean, at the end of the day, you know, if you're going to drink the transition Kool-Aid, you got to understand you might give up one or two in transition too.
Right.
And that's not the kid's fault. You know, don't be screaming at you can't have it both ways. You know.
Right.
I mean, once you're in, you're in.
Right. And if you, you know, you mentioned our offensive stats, but you look at our defensive stat. I mean, we were towards the top of the country in goals per game. But defensively, you know, we probably ranked middle of the pack with what we gave up per game. And I think that's a direct correlation of the way that we play.
Yeah, I have it at 10.04 on the stats online. Yeah.
Right. So, you know, ideally, you know, being a defensive guy in college, you know, my whole thing, you know, we can't give up more than 8 goals. If we give up 8 or less, we should win the game. Where now, you know, with playing fast and, you know, the way the rules are changing with, you know, the pace of play and the shot clock, the timer on, you know, I think 8 goals is, you know, if you can hold a team to under 8, you know, you're doing a really, really good job.
Well, and you're playing good teams too, man.
I'm
pretty sure, what's the name of that school in Gaffney? Limestone or something like that?
Yeah, Limestone, sure.
No, he's a big, big, big fan of the site. J.B. Clark's been very, very good to us. But I'm just saying, you know, when you're playing that caliber of team, you know, and playing that kind of schedule, and it looks to me like you're working on continually upgrading the schedule. And the fact of the matter is, you know, the whole D2 community is, you know, once you get by those 10 or 12 teams, you know, there were like 15 or 20 guys that were all pretty, pretty close. You know, now you're seeing 15, 18 teams that are really, really good. I mean, you just look at, we talked off the air the other day. I mean, guys like Lenore Ryan, Tampa, Florida Tech. I mean, there's some names that you never saw before that you're seeing now.
Yeah, and it's, I mean, that all has to do with, you know, the growth of the game and, you know, really coaches just working hard and, you know, doing their due diligence in recruiting and finding guys that, you know, from hotbed areas and guys from non-traditional areas that, you know, that they think can help them. And, you know, I think with, you know, as these colleges and universities continue to add lacrosse and support it, well, you know, you're going to see more parity, you know, individually.
Parity. Now, there's a good word, Coach. Nice one. We're always looking for good vocabulary words on LastCoachMike.com. Parity, that's a nice one, man. Good job. Anyway. Hey, Coach?
Yep.
Oh, okay. So let's get back to the plan here. We do our two half fields on some kind of specialty work, then we get back into full field riding and clearing. You know, we talk to coaches that are half field, full field guys. I'm not sure I'd put you in that category, but it's kind of interesting looking down the practice plan the way you have it here.
Yeah, so I've been very fortunate to work with some very gifted head coaches. You know, Coach Woods, you know, really turned my eye to the transition style of play and, you know, the Canadian style of play and, you know, what those guys can, you know, can bring to the table. And when I played at Mars Hill, when I coached with them there, you know, we prided ourselves in being fast paced and up tempo and pushing transition. And then, you know, Coach Klarman came in. And for those who don't know who Coach Klarman is, he was the last head coach to win a national championship at the University of North Carolina. You know, came out of retirement and, you know, actually just won a conference championship last year with Mars Hill. But, you know, I got a chance to work for him for 2 years, and, you know, he was a very big, you know.
So the listeners know, what's he got, Jace? I mean, he's got to have close to 30 years of coaching experience.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, at all levels, in all kinds of scenarios, in the big stadiums, at the intermediate-sized schools. I mean, yeah, I mean, you look at the wealth of experience there. I mean, if there's anybody that's just about seen it all, he's got to be the guy that just about has seen it all.
Absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, he was a very, very big two-half-field guy. And, you know, it was a little hard for me to adjust at the beginning. You know, we would go two half fields for about 45 minutes of practice. And we would, you know, our first defense would be playing against the, you know, the second attack. And then we would, split our midfielders into, four lines. And we would rotate the midfield lines every 12 to 15 minutes. And, you know, we worked on, in the fall, we worked on our offense. In the spring, you know, I was the defensive coordinator. I had them, you know, the offensive guys on my end were running the opponent's offense. And I had the first D guys and we were defending it how we were going to defend it on game day. And it just, you know, there's 100 different ways to skin a cat and that was his way. And, you know, I definitely saw value and found a ton of value in that style of practice. And we would still, you know, get up and down and do our transition stuff, but the majority of practice was those two half fields.
Well, and I don't think he's shooting 41 shots a game. But anyway, in your half field work, we've talked a lot about 6v6, Jason. You know, we've talked to a lot of coaches that actually run more 4v4 than they run 6v6 in their half fields, which is kind of interesting. And over the last year, we've kind of seen an influx of guys that are running more 5v5. And we've also talked to coaches that scoff at people that run 5v5. You know, There's kind of two camps there, at least, you know, on those that we've interviewed on the website. So in your half-field work, are you integrating 4v4s, or have you played around with 5v5? Your thoughts?
Yeah, I guess I'm right down the middle. You know, I think that there's a value to doing all those things, 6-on-6, 4v4, 5v5, you know, even 3-on-3, you know, to a point. I think for defensive purposes, and you talk about communication and sliding and, you know, trying to figure out your spacing defensively, it's a lot harder to cover, you know, five guys, with the space that they have to re-dodge and the length of your recovery, once you do slide. So, you know, if we're working on a defensive side of the field, you know, I think 5v5 is a great avenue to, you know, teach your guys how to communicate, you know, make sure your second slide's getting down, and really talking through the recovery process. Because if you don't, you're going to get burned on the backside because of how much space, you know, the offense has. 4-on-4s, we do a ton of 4-on-4s. Our offense is a little bit different. You know, it's really based on a lot of picks, you know, on and off the ball. So, you know, to teach our offense, you know, at the early stages, you know, 4-on-4s are something that, you know, we will do quite often, both early in the fall and early in the spring. But 6-on-6, there's no substitute for 6-on-6 because that's what you're playing, you know, when you're in settled offense. So, you know, when we're doing our teaching, you know, in the beginning or middle of practice, we will, you know, 4-on-4s, 5-on-5s, 3-on-3s, you know, with the attack and defense. And then, you know, when towards the end, if it's a day that we're just going to do 6-on-6, you know, we'll play that at the end. But very rarely will we go 6-on-6, you know, in the middle or beginning of practice.
That's an interesting philosophy and one I haven't really heard, Coach. You know, I think the old school coaches still have, an element to their practice plans that I would call, for lack of a better description, progression. Okay. You know, it seemed like when we started this project, the transition portion of the practices were, you know, in essence, you know, a build-up, you know, a 3v2 to a 4v3, very similar to what you were talking about on your full-field transition work. You know, now we're seeing coaches really kind of take that philosophy and throw it in the trash, you know. I mean, it'll go from a 5v4 to even a 2v1 or a 3v2, and then the next day maybe 4v3 and 6v5. You know, it's no longer quite the build-up, but it seemed like, you know, traditionally we were still coming back to, at least in many, many cases, full field at the end of practice, and you're kind of closing practice with the 6v6s.
Yeah, sometimes. I mean, it just depends on...
Yeah, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to make it sound like you did it every day. Yeah, my apology.
No, no worries. And it just depends on, you know, what we're trying to accomplish for that day. You know, if we have a, you know, let's say on a Thursday, we decide at the end of practice we're gonna play for a half an hour. We're gonna split the team up. We're gonna face them off, and we're just gonna play for 30 minutes. We film that. You know, we notice that, you know, we're pushing the ball way too much in transition, and we're forcing passes, and we're turning it over. You know, maybe the next day we come back and we say, okay, we're gonna run 6-on-6. If your team turns the ball over, you guys have to sprint to the far restraining line and back.
Yeah.
And we try to teach them, you know, ball control and valuing the ball, which is, you know, it's a tough thing to do when you want to play up tempo and you want to play fast pace. Is, you know, you give them that freedom, teaching them when to take a chance and when not to take a chance. And I think that's important, but that's part of the growing pains with playing fast.
Well, and that, you know, I mean, if anybody had a written solution to that question about balance, you know, they'd have it licked, you know.
Right, right.
Especially when you're dealing with a 17 or an 18 or a 20 or a 21-year-old.
Absolutely.
And maybe it's a second line middie that thinks he's got a chance to do something special, you know.
Right.
And when you watch the film, you're thinking that's why you were a second line middie. I don't mean that. No, I take that back. That was, yeah, I feel like that was pretty slanderous. I apologize. Coach, I'm really surprised. I've been kind of waiting to ask you this question. We've been talking like 35 minutes, okay?
Yep.
And being the Sean Woods guy, I've yet to hear you say ground balls.
Yeah, you know.
I mean, he's like an anal ground ball guy, man.
Yeah, it gets you more possessions, it wins you games. We do focus a lot on ground ball work, you know, especially early on in both seasons, in the fall and in the spring, and we'll do, you know, a multitude of different drills.
Yeah, correct me if I'm wrong. Doesn't he start every practice with a new ground ball drill?
I don't know if he does now. There was a point when I was playing and working with him that the pretty much first contact drill of every practice was a ground ball drill.
Yeah.
Which it's great. It sets the tone. We don't start every day with that, but we do focus on, you know, especially early on in the year, you know, the importance of picking up a ground ball. And when we're watching film and a kid makes what seems like a nonchalant play, just picking up a ground ball with a guy on his back, you know, we point that out and say, you know, guys, this seems like just another lacrosse play, but, you know, he picked up the ground ball, we moved the ball to the backside and we scored a goal. Or, you know, he picked up a tough ground ball in the crease, we settled, we got the ball around, we ran good offense and we scored. None of this would have been possible if we didn't get this tough ground ball. So, definitely something that, you know, it's important, and I think it's important to every team. It's, you know, it's just how do you implement it? You know, do you want to take, you know, 10 to 15 minutes out of your practice plan, you know, to work on, you know, specifically ground balls?
Yeah, I just think of all the guys I've interviewed, he's the most anal ground ball guy. I think the drill I wrote about with him was something he called butt-to-butt, too, if I'm not mistaken. I think I have it on the website.
Yeah.
Like a scramble ground ball drill. You know, you have six guys in an area, you know, and two guys butt-to-butt, you know, and they fight for the ground ball. And, I mean, yeah, he had a way of even making a half-field or a full-field scramble a vicious ground ball drill to start or something like that. I don't know.
Yeah, it's one of my favorites that we still use, we did a drill, we call it 3-on-3 ground balls to the cage, and, you know, we line the kids up in six different lines, you know, half in one color, half in another, and, you throw a ground ball to the corner, and, you know, all six guys sprint for the ground ball, you know, they play it out till they turn it over or score, and then you roll a second ground ball in, and they fight for that ground ball, and then they play that one out, and then the next group goes. A little variation of that drill.
So before you go to the variation, you say you roll it to the line. Where are these six lines lined up, Coach?
Either at the restraining line or 5 yards behind the restraining line.
Okay, cool. Yeah.
And then the variation is, and this is more of a...
And then you roll that ball back towards GLE? Is that where you're rolling?
Yeah, back towards GLE or the end line, or you put it on the wing. You know, I try not to drop it right in the middle of the field because you got...
No, I get it, yeah.
You know, guys running full speed. There could be some pretty nasty collisions. You know, a second variation or another variation of that, we put the guys in the four corners of the box. You know... They're split up, you know, black and gold, and you roll a ground ball out to one line, and whoever picks it up, if black picks it up, they're on offense, and, you know, the gold team's on defense, they have to lock their players off, and the offensive team can't go to the cage until everyone gets a touch. So it really works on, you know, offensive players V-cutting to the ball, setting picks.
That.
Yeah, setting picks on and off the ball to get each other open. You know, works on communication, and once that last offensive player, that fourth guy, or would be the third guy, gets that final touch, now everything's to the cage, and you're playing regular defense 4-on-4. So that's another one that we implement early on in the season.
I need a sexy name for that one, Coach. I'm gonna write about this one. You got a name for that, Joel?
We call it the Mule Drill.
I like it, man. You know, college coaches suck at naming drills. You know, I mean, it's like four corner GB drill. You're going like, come on, man. I mean, I've done 120 of these. Give me something sexy to write about. You know, I like it. The Mule Drill. Where'd you get that one from?
It was actually my former assistant, Mike Horowitz, who's now an assistant coach up at St. Joe's. He played at Muhlenberg, and they were the Muhlenberg Mules, and you know, that was a drill that was a staple for them. And you know, I like to think of a mule as an animal that works hard, and you definitely have to work hard in that drill to get the ball. So you know, that's something that we implemented here, and our guys enjoy that drill.
When was you said he was at St. Joe's, yeah. When was he at Muhlenberg?
I don't remember when he graduated from Muhlenberg.
I'll tell you how old I am, Jason. One of my good buddies, Chris Gallagher in Columbus, Ohio, his son coached there for a while as an assistant.
Okay, so he coached Coach Horowitz.
And then he just got the D3 job. It's a new job at Muskingum last year.
Yep, yes.
In Ohio.
Yep.
Yeah.
Small world.
I was always pulling for Muhlenberg, man. They just made a coaching change, I read, right?
Yeah, they did. They did.
Okay. He's such a great guy, you know.
I didn't know him personally, but I know Coach Horowitz thought very highly of him.
I mean, I worked some camps with him. It's just the way he related to the kids, you know. I mean, it was really, 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 really good. Coach, let me ask you about man up and man down a little bit.
Absolutely.
I had talked to you, you know, off the air. We were talking about, you know, stuff that we saw on the website that made me melancholy, you know. Afterwards, I'm going, oh, shoot, why wasn't I doing that years ago? It makes so much sense, you know. And we talked about guys potentially integrating, rather than doing it at the end of practice, actually integrating man up, man down throughout the practice plan. You know, it's mind-boggling here. You know, it's hard to believe it's even legit. But I got the man up percentage at 56%.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I want to say the NCAA average is 28, 29, you know, 29.5, 29.8, just under 30. Man, you killed it on man up. So how are you working on man up in your practice plans, Coach?
You know,
you didn't think I'd be this prepared, did you?
No, I did. I was
prepared, hombre, for this interview, man.
No, I was actually hoping, you know, you asked about man up. You know, we do it at the end of practice. You know, I'm.
You know, for a young guy, you're pretty traditional, aren't you?
I guess. I mean, I just think that it's when you're talking man up and man down, there's so many different variables, you know, that can happen. And, you know, those guys, you know, your offensive guys, they all need to be on the same page. Your defensive guys all need to be on the same page. But when you're talking, you know, man up and man down, you know, that is a stat or that can change a game. You know, if I can, you know, if I have to kill, you know, six penalties in a game and I can kill off four of them, probably odds are that I'm going to win that game. If I have six man ups and, you know, I can score on five of them, you know, odds are that we're going to have, you know, a good chance to be in the game or win it at the end. So, you know, we script man up and man down, you know, towards the end of practice. And we usually have about, you know, 5 to 7 minutes of walk through, just refreshing the guys on what we're doing, you know, the different looks. You know, we'll have a scout man down come in, and then always, except the day before a game, we will bring in, you know, we'll have the first man up, go against the first man down, and you know, we'll run our offensive stuff, and then we'll draw up the other team's, you know, man up looks, and we'll have our first, you know, guys run it against, you know, the first man down defense.
Well, that's kind of an interesting philosophy too, huh?
Yeah, I mean, it's and that
gives them different ideas and different looks.
Yeah, yeah, and you know, it's something that we did last year, and you know, I'm not going to name any teams, but you know, we started, there were two teams in particular. We, you know, were running their man up plays in practice, and you know, we were getting some pretty good looks. So, you know, we actually used them in.
I mean, I'm 59, man. I can't tell you how many times I've had that dialogue with the guys that coach with me, whether it's offensively in schemes, or whether it's you know, a look out of a 2-2-2, or whether it's a look out of man up, man down, where you're going like, man, that looks pretty good. I think we just needed to steal a couple of elements of that.
Yeah, and you know, we obviously skewed it a little bit to our personnel, and but it, you know, once or twice it worked, and you know, I'm not a very complicated man up guy. You know, when I first started coaching man up, it was all about, you know, different plays and this, and you know, we got to do this play or that play, and you know, the more I realized that if you give the kids a base and kind of teach them, you know, what movements you want them to make and where to throw the ball, you know, you can be pretty successful, rather than have them memorize, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 different plays. You know, you kind of just have them play out of a certain set and, you know, teach them what they can do, you know, within that, in that framework. And, you know, they were pretty successful.
So, Coach, without getting into anything proprietary, can you give me a general overview of the sets that you have found to be more successful for you? And secondly, are there one or two coaching tips, general philosophies that go with those sets that would help our listeners?
Yeah, I would say, you know, for me, you know, I'm a big fan, you know, old school, I guess, I'm a big fan of the 3-3. You know, I think changing sets is important, you know, especially as you get on, later on into the season, and, you know, a team's got film on you. They say, okay, well, they're going to start in this and they're going to do that. You know, so maybe you start in something else and you find a different way to get into what you want to do.
Yeah, I think it's
important. You know, teaching the kids to be unselfish and make the extra pass, and, you know, having roles within your man up unit. You know, we had a guy as a junior. He finished with, I think he had 10 points as a junior. Did not play man up. His senior year, you know, came in, he ended up with 36 points, played man up, had a lot of man up goals, and, you know, his role was, you know, he's gonna be the guy on the crease, and he, you know, he's like the Energizer Bunny. He's running around, sprinting 5 to 7 yards at a time, just trying to get open and occupy that crease guy. And he didn't score a ton of man up goals, but he definitely, you know, made our unit more successful because they couldn't help off the crease, and hedge off the crease to get to our outside shooters.
Are you drifting those wing guys back behind GLE, Coach?
No, we.
Or do you pretty much play it straight up?
When they don't have the ball, we want them in a position where they can catch the ball and score.
Right.
You know, obviously if the ball's transferring from behind the cage, we want those guys behind pushing aside, but, you know, I like all six players, you know, above the cage, if you will, so they can catch the ball, and score, at any time.
Yeah, I don't know, man. Our coaches on the site, it's a very, very popular question that I get, you know. You know, I'm watching Pfeiffer play, right? And their 3-3 man up looks dynamic, and then they threw it away twice a game. What makes me think that my high school kids won't throw it away 5 times a game? Or,
yeah.
Excuse me, more importantly, not have it backed up, I guess is a better way to say it.
Right. And you know, it's, it's tough with the backup, you know, if you're having those guys, you know, so, you know, up above or at GLE. But that being said, you know, we coach those guys to say, listen, you know, you have to be a lacrosse player and, you know, realize that if our righty or lefty shooter has his hands free from 8 yards, he's probably going to shoot the ball. So, you know, you need to be prepared to get to the end line and back that shot up. You know, as far as throwing the ball away, early on in the year, we throw the ball away a ton. And it is, you know, just teaching them that, you know, you have to work harder when you're man up because the defense is going to work harder when they're man down. And, you know, you have to make the right pass. And, you know, the first look is not always the best look. So our philosophy is, you know, work for the best shot, not the first shot.
And the philosophy there is still diagonal skips if you can get them?
Yes, if you can get them. You know, we actually struggled with that at the beginning of last year, as, you know, guys trying to throw too many skip passes down to the corners. And we had to kind of, you know, reel them in a little bit, show them some extra film on, you know, if we work the ball around one or two more times, you know, this guy will suck up, and this is now it's really open. So yeah. Rather than trying to thread the needle, you know, be a little bit more patient. And even if you don't score, you know, while the guy's still in the box, you know, if you score as he's running in, you know, we still score a goal, you know, regardless of, you know, whether you're technically man up or not, you know. So there's always that extra, you know, 5 seconds with that guy running in from the midline or from the box. That you get. So, you know, teaching those guys patience and, you know, finding, you know, like I said, finding the best look, or the best shot and not the first shot. You know, that was something that we keyed on.
I think you did a much better job of explaining it there in the last 5 seconds than I've done in 35 years.
Thank you.
I mean, you know, I'm always telling kids, I don't mind that you threw that pass. I mind when you threw that pass.
Right.
You know, I don't mind that you shot. I mind when you shot.
Right. Okay?
I mean, a half time around the outer perimeter of our man up is not when it's your turn to shoot. You know, well, it was so open, the guy was 5 yards. Hey, it'll be so open in 8 seconds. It'll be that open in 14 seconds, probably more, you know.
Yeah, that's another thing we tell our guys. If it's open once, it'll be open again.
You know, and if you're coaching high school and you've got a couple of, just seems like in today's world, you know, extremely talented sophomores and maybe even a junior that didn't play much the year before. I mean, yeah, their motives are noble, you know. I mean, they're not trying to screw the team, but yeah, you're just going like, man, you got to be more patient, you know.
Right.
I mean, especially if we've got a lead, you know.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, I get it. Coach, a new twist on a drill or a new ideal on a drill that somebody brought to you? I mean, a lot of times when you get a new assistant coach, you get a new ideal for a drill or a new thing. How long has Nicholas been with you?
He's in his second season.
Year. Okay. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, it's hard to tell. These websites aren't always updated, Coach.
Right.
I'm telling
right.
You. And it's not just you; it's everybody. Yeah.
Yeah. No. He. As far as goalies, I am amazed at the goalie position and, you know, the different ways to coach goalies. And, you know, traditionally, I guess I never played goalie, you know, I mean, the way I always taught goalies was, you know, step hard to the ball, you know, I had different hand drills and, you know,
pointed up and all the traditional stuff.
Yeah, you know, a lot of tennis ball work.
Right.
so, you know, Nick has definitely brought some, you know, some different drills as far as, you know, positioning with goalies, you know, getting pipe to pipe, you know, leading with your stick, you know, making sure that, you know, you're playing your angles properly. You know, he also does.
Yeah, let me interrupt you.
Yeah.
Were you at IMLCA a couple years ago when Trevor Tierney spoke on the no-step coaching method for goalies?
I was not, but it's funny you bring that up. My former assistant, Mike Horowitz, is the loves that style of coaching.
It was like the last day, and it was like maybe 45 or 50 coaches in the audience, right?
Okay.
And I said he spoke on the last day, so a lot of guys had left.
Yep.
And there was maybe 40 or 50 coaches in the audience, okay? And when he went through that, I'm telling you, you could hear a pin drop.
Yeah.
And guys were looking at each other with their jaw on the ground. You know, I think they had heard it in passing reference, but they had never seen it taught the way he was teaching it via film and the drills he does and blah, 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 you know?
Right.
And again, going back to your comment a half hour ago, there's no one way to skin the cat, you know? I mean, it's not right or wrong.
Right.
But, man, it was revelationary, you know? Or, I mean, the old-timers like me were just sitting there going, wow, you know, really? Okay. You know, I mean, and like I said, I don't know anything about any goalie drills enough to coach it, you know, one-on-one. I'm just, you know, I suck. I mean, it's just what it is. But, I mean, you know.
Yeah, I didn't mean
to interrupt you. Go ahead.
No. I mean, to that point, I just think it depends who you have in the cage. I mean, do you have a kid that plays with his heels on the goal line, that has tremendously quick hands and is a big body, or do you have a kid that plays a high arc and, you know, needs to, you know, to take that hard step to really cut angles down? I mean, it really all depends on who you have in the net and what the kid's comfortable with. You know, when we're getting goalies, you know, we're getting them. They've been playing, you know, goalie their whole life, and they've been taught a certain way, you know, their whole life. So I think for us as coaches, you know, we need to be cognizant of that and realize that if we're telling this kid to change everything he's been doing for 10 years, you know, it's probably going to take him a little while to adapt and figure out.
Great point.
You know, I think that, you know, I'll go back. I coached a kid named Dylan Price when I was at Mars Hill, and he was, you know, very big kid, tremendously quick hands, very explosive with his first step and his punch. And, you know, he really coached me a little bit on how he wanted to be coached. You know, he was a 3-time All-American, and, you know, I was very much of the thought process, you know, step hard, you know, attack the ball, you know, get down on bounce shots. You know, my first year here at Pfeiffer, we had a freshman come in, and, you know, he was very much on the other way, like only stepped when he really had to, you know, wasn't very explosive towards the ball, but, you know, still it worked for him, and we had to tweak a few things, but, you know, he is a very, very good goalie, and he just does it a little bit differently, which I don't think is a bad thing at all.
You know, it's really funny you said that, Coach. I think I've done three. I can't remember. But the last interview we did with Pilot, you know, I'm going like, hey, listen, man, I've interviewed you. You've become a friend of mine. I know you. On these podcasts, we've never talked about goalie play, you know. I mean, who would interview Bill Pilot 3 times and not talk about goalie play?
I don't know.
Yeah, it'd be a dumbass named Lax Coach Mike is who it is, okay? But at the end of the day, you know, we did an entire podcast. And he, you know, you would think with as many goalies, I mean, you got to believe, what, 30 or 40% of all NCAA goalies went to one of his camps when they were
there. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
You know, I don't want to throw a percentage out there that I can't back up. But, I mean, it's significant, okay?
Yes.
And I was blown away when he reiterated the comment that you just made. And he said, as I've gotten more experienced and gotten older, he said, we kind of get a feel for the goalie, and then we sit down with the goalie, and we ask that goalie how he wants to be coached. And it even went into pregame warm-ups. You know, and some guys want to warm up early, some guys want to warm up, get right into transition. You know, I had a great high school team one time, and the kid was a great goalie at Birmingham Southern. Actually, the year they upset, you know, our boys at Colorado College in the conference. And, you know, he was an attackman that just couldn't run, you know. But to make a long story short, you know, he was the kind of guy that, you know, before we would, even if he didn't do transition drills or get in the cage, you know, he needed to go sit on the bench by himself.
Right.
And get composed. He was a cerebral kid. And, man, when we made that change, the difference in his career was night and day. And I'll never forget when he went to Birmingham Southern, you know, he said, can you call Coach and talk to him and tell him I need my private time? You know, and that happened to be Andy Bilzerian, and I just happened to know him, you know, and I called him and I said, hey, listen, I'm not telling you what to do, but, you know, this is an interesting kid. He's not a lifetime goalie. He started playing goalie as a junior in high school. And I think that game against Colorado College, he had 26 saves.
Wow.
But anyway, yeah, great point in terms of looking at, and it's no different than coaching man up, really. I mean, the metaphor is find out where your talent is and then structure your man up to your talent, you know.
Exactly.
Find out what makes your goalie comfortable and then do that. Man, we're coming up on it. God, an hour goes fast, doesn't it, Coach?
Yeah.
I have had such a blast talking to you. Let's do camps. Are you running camps there at Pfeiffer, and where do we find the information? And I'll make sure I get it all posted on the site.
Yeah, so we actually this year we haven't done any prospect days here in the past, but you know we're having our first prospect day this fall, Sunday, October 11th. You know, 8 a.m. till 4 p.m. And information can be found at langlacrosse.com. You know, we're also in
NGELacrosse.com.
That's correct.
Okay.
And we're also in the process of, you know, trying to do an instructional overnight camp, in the summer. We are, you know, working, you know, with the university on dates right now. And,
okay, great.
You know, we'll have information out on the website, you know, hopefully by the end of the fall and, you know, promoting that to young lacrosse players in the Charlotte, Greensboro, Raleigh areas. And, you know, hopefully we can get that off the ground.
Jason, are you looking more as an individual camp for that, or are you looking at potentially team camps for your summer stuff?
Right now we're more focused on getting individuals here. You know, if teams would like to sign up, you know, there'd definitely be, you know, a team discount, you know, if you bring X amount of guys, from one club team or one high school team. You know, I just think with the amount, with the growth of the game, blowing up, it's just, there's not a lot of options for instructional based camps. You know, everything now is moving towards recruiting. You know, I got to go to this showcase or that showcase. So, you know, I think that the traditional instructional camp, is dying out. So, you know, we're gonna hopefully bring a little bit of that back, next summer here at Pfeiffer, and, you know, hopefully it's something that we can hang our hats on.
Man, I applaud you for that. I, you know, one of my best friends in the world is, Teddy Wolfert, the high school coach at Upper Arlington,
okay.
Columbus, Ohio. And, I don't know what his record is, like 280-36 or something stupid. But anyway, you know, we were doing a clinic together, you know, and he said, there's a place for everybody to play.
Yes.
You know, and when I was at Auburn, I used to get like 2 or 3 D1 guys a year transfer into Auburn. You know, you hear that mantra, no fun D1, you know.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I mean, not everybody is going to play, you know, incredible lacrosse. And, you know, for a 15-year-old or a 16-year-old, getting back to the skills camps and the individual camps, you know, I think is huge. The other thing is, you know, we're huge proponents on our site of the prospect days. And we tell our listeners, you know, maybe you're better off not playing travel ball and going to 4 prospect days. Because, you know, I don't know how many coaches or kids I've coached. I mean, I don't even know. It's probably 2,000 or 3,000. And how many have played college ball? Probably 200 or 300.
Right.
But 25% or 30% of those or more have left after their first year.
Wow.
You know, and, well, you see it. I mean, you recruit, you know, 18 guys. How many come back? You know, 14, 15? I mean, it's just a myriad of reasons. I mean,
right.
Good reasons, bad reasons, whatever, whatever. But, man, if you can get on that campus and get a feel of that campus and get a feel for that coach and that coaching staff, you know, I think you'll be farther ahead, and it's something I applaud you for. Hey, listen, man, we're coming up on it. I have had such a blast talking to you. I love defensive guys that become offensive coaches? I get asked that question all the time. And it's kind of funny. Guys like Nicholas, maybe, I don't know, all former goalies think they can warm up goalies. You know, they all want to be the warm-up guy because they all think they can shoot.
Yeah.
It's a unilateral law of lacrosse. Ex-goalies think they can shoot, okay?
Yeah.
And I think a not very well-known unilateral law of lacrosse is that guys that spent 15 or 20 years on the defensive end, you know, there's nothing wrong with those guys becoming great offensive coaches, too. And, you know, I get asked that question all the time. Or when I see guys I played with in college going, do these people know that you played crease defense, you know? And, I'm going, no, don't tell anybody, man. Don't tell anybody. You know, according to all them, I was an attackman. but yeah, at the end of the day, I have loved the conversation. I got two or three drills here I can't wait to write about. Maybe one for my site and another one for Lax Power, giving all the credit where it belongs. Coach, you're going to do great things, man. I just have so enjoyed talking to you. Thank you so much for coming on.
Well, thank you for having me. It was a great time, and you know, hopefully we could do it again soon.
Yeah, I talked to Coach off the air. You know, there are always a little bit of anxieties about what they need to prepare for. I thought he did a heck of a job. Anyway, for all you guys out there, man, never, never forget, you got an unbelievable responsibility influencing the lives of these young people. Take it seriously. God bless. Until next time, Lax Coach Mike, laxcoachmike.com.